delicates. I'm Lee.
I'm Peg.
And I'm Dee.
We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s. We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers the ballads, the rock tunes, the songs we all dance to, the girl groups and boy groups, solos and doo-wop. He talks to the stars of the stage shows and sock hops. We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s.
I'm Ronnie Allen, and it's my pleasure to introduce a man who has a couple of very impressive things on his resume. He starred in the Broadway musical Hair. He had a big hit record called Lay a Little Lovin' on Me. And in addition to that, he made so many other great records, and you're going to hear some of them during this show. I am so happy to have on the phone with me the leader of the band. His name is Robin McNamara. I bet you didn't know that it was Robin McNamara who was leading that band.
How you doing, Ronnie? Good to talk with you, brother.
Doing fine. Your email address contains old hippie. Are you an old hippie right now?
Old hippie, I'm just I'll always be 15 until I can't anymore, you know what I'm saying? I'm a child of the 50s and the 60s, and the 60s were a wonderful, wonderful time.
What is a hippie?
Actually, hippieism, if you think about it, grew out of the beatnik generation, people like Ginsberg and Kerouac, you know, who were the beatnikism of the 40s and 50s. That's sort of what hippieism grew out of, and the thing about hippieism was it was very sincere. The peace and the love was a sincere, wonderful movement. And I think that, you know, as long as you have those values and that way of thinking, you know, freelance type of thinking, anybody can be a hippie.
Okay. Even Ronnie Allen can be a hippie.
Sure, brother.
Okay. Robin, you were born in Newton, Massachusetts?
Newton, Massachusetts, that's right. About 5 miles west of Boston. 47.
And you grew up during the 50s, the Eisenhower era. Tell me a little bit about your dad.
My father was a carpet salesman. We didn't have much growing up, us five kids in Newton, Mass., but we had wonderful love in the family. I mean, our door was never locked. Mom and Dad, they're up in heaven now, but God rest their soul. I mean, our door was never locked. Anyone was always welcome in our home. They sort of taught us kids, treat others the way you want to be treated. Yeah, I got two other brothers and two other sisters.
Where did you fall?
Right in the middle.
What music do you remember first listening to?
Well, my older brother, Ray, he used to somehow tune in these blues stations from Chicago late at night, and he turned me on to some good stuff. I mean, like Arthur Alexander, You Better Move On, and also Fats Domino, of course. And then, I'll tell you what, the song that really got me going was the song Gene Vincent, Bebopalula.
Well, Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby. Bebopalula, she's my baby.
Once I heard that, rock and roll was in my bones forever.
Bebopalula, one of the great ones.
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget, years ago, when I heard Bebopalula, my mother got me for Christmas one time. I told her I wanted to get, you know, more Gene Vincent songs. And for Christmas, she got this big box, and she put a smaller box, and I kept opening these boxes, and finally I got to the bottom, and it was Gene Vincent and the Blue Caps. Great material on there.
And Gene, unfortunately, left us way too soon.
Oh, yeah.
A great recording artist, and he and Eddie Cochran.
Eddie Cochran.
So many great ones. Well, it was in 10th grade, I guess partly influenced by the people we've just mentioned, that you and a couple of friends formed a band.
In high school, I had two or three bands. The first one was Robin and the Hoods.
Oh, that's the one that I was actually looking at. Robin and the Hoods. That was a difficult name to come up with, I'm sure. What instrument did you play?
I didn't play anything at that time. I played guitar and keyboard now, but at that time I just sang.
You were just the front man of the group.
Right.
How many people were in Robin? How many Hoods?
Five.
Four. It was you and the four Hoods.
Me and four Hoods.
What kind of music were you doing?
Well, you know, back then we were just doing what was popular on the radio. And we were doing Roy Orbison and Gene Pitney and just rock and roll songs that were big at that time.
Yeah, were you trying to get a record deal at any point there?
Actually, we did. It was strange. In Boston, we sort of got a local deal with an agent. Nothing ever really came of it, but we did, actually. And then I moved into the 11th grade. It was in a band called Robin and the Stingrays. And then in the 12th grade, we got another band called Smoke. That's probably my favorite band of all time. You know, that's when the psychedelia was sort of happened. The Beatles come over, and because I graduated in 65, and the Beatles come over in 64. And that whole transformation was taking place.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just the Beatles. It was a few other groups came over, too. It was really an invasion.
Oh, it sure was.
Somewhere along that line, you kind of decided that this was something you really wanted to do. You weren't probably sure of exactly what form, but, I mean, music was going to be your life.
Well, you know, I had sort of a choice. In high school, I was given serious thought. I'm very fascinated by the weather and meteorology. And at that time, there weren't many schools that had a major in meteorology. And I was sort of preparing to go that route. But having performed in bands for 3 years in high school, I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to pursue that, and that's what I did. After high school, instead of going to college, actually, I lived down in Jersey with my ex-wife and my infant son, with her relatives for a while. They all thought I was nuts. But I started auditioning, you know, for stuff in New York.
You looked at your two choices. You could have been a weatherman or a meteorologist. I should say meteorologist. Is it more respectful to say meteorologist than weatherman?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter.
George Collin, the hippy dippy weatherman.
The hippy dippy. Yeah, you could have been the hippy dippy weatherman, and you could have had music. And then you decided, well, I'll go whichever way the wind blows.
Yeah, really.
And it blew you toward the music. For a brief period of time, you worked in a New Jersey car wash.
Yeah, I sure did. Matter of fact, like I say, at that time I didn't play the guitar or the keyboard, and my guitar player from Smoke, he was going to Emerson College at the time. He really didn't like it too much, so I talked him into coming down to Jersey with me and staying with my wife and my infant son. And he came down, and he played the guitar and the keyboard, so that's when we started writing music. When I'd go audition in New York, which is only about a half hour from where we lived in Jersey, you know, he'd come with me and back me up.
There was a casting call for a show called Hair.
Right.
And you heard about that. Did you immediately say, hey, I got to audition for this? Was it something?
No, not at all. I mean, my writing partner came down and stayed with us, Jimmy Credicus. He actually wrote Lay a Little Lovin' on Me with me and Jeff. My manager at the time, Mark Allen was his name. He had Tommy James and a whole bunch of other people. I went into Mark's office one day, and he had already negotiated the deal with me with Jeff Barry with Steve Rickard. Still, you know, I had nothing going, and Jimmy and I were working in the car wash every day. But I walked into Mark's office one day, and one of his secretaries said to me, Robin, why don't you go audition for Hair? And I said to her, what's Hair? I had no clue. Then I checked it out, found out what it was all about, and I went down and auditioned, and Jimmy would back me up. And the auditions went on for about 2 or 3 months for different people, and then finally after 3 months, I got a role.
When you did the audition, was the show already on Broadway?
Yeah. I joined the show probably a few months after it opened.
So, in other words, the show had been out there.
Yeah.
And they were looking for replacement.
Replacement.
Okay. But the initial part that you got was a member of the chorus?
Exactly. When I joined the show, you had people in it like Melba Moore, Diane Keaton, Keith Carradine, and Heather McRae, Ben Vereen, people who were just not even known at that time, you know, just kids, all of us kids running around New York trying to make something of ourselves, you know. It was just a wonderful time. Like you say, I started out in the chorus, and then while I was doing my stuff in the chorus, they asked me to understudy the role of Wolf, and Keith Carradine at that time was playing the role. Claude, which was Jim Rado, one of the writers, Jerry and Jim played the leads at that time, and Jim decided to stop doing it, and so Keith went up and took over the role of Claude, so I got the role of Wolf, and then as I was doing Wolf, they asked me to understudy the role of Claude.
Wow.
And so I just followed Keith, you know, and then Keith got some kind of a movie deal out in L.A., so he left the show, and I got the role of Claude after he left.
For those that are not familiar with Hair, the two major roles were Berger and Claude.
Yeah.
Was Berger a first name or last name? I forgot. Berger.
No, just Berger.
Oh, just Berger.
Well,
and that,
George, you know, George Berger, yeah. But
it may have been George Berger, but no, nobody ever called him George. It was always Berger.
No, it was just Berger. See, actually, some of the lines would use the name George if somebody was irritated with him. You know,
he got mad.
You know?
Yeah. Claude Hooper Bukowski.
Yeah.
The writers of Hair were
Jimmy Rado and Jerry Ragney. And Galt McDermott, who wrote the music.
Galt was the only one that was not actually in the show.
He was a genius.
Jerry Ragney played Berger, and sadly, Jerry is no longer with us.
No, he died in 91.
And Jim Rado played Claude Hooper Bukowski. You don't have a recording of you actually singing Manchester, England, right? You
know? No. One of the songs I did in the show, though.
But it's one of the songs you did in the show. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play just a little bit of Jim Rado doing Manchester, England, the original Broadway cast of Hair.
Manchester, England, England, across the Atlantic Sea. And I'm a genius, genius. I believe in God. And I believe that God believes in clouds. That's me. That's me.
Okay, now after all these years, can you actually do that part?
Manchester, England? Oh, geez. Acapella over the phone.
Acapella over the phone for the millions of fans that are listening. Not to get you nervous,
right.
But...
Manchester, England, England, across the Atlantic Sea, and I'm a genius, genius. I believe in God, and I believe that God believes in Claude. That's me. That's me. That's me. That's enough.
Well, actually, I wanted to hear that other part called Hooper Bukowski.
Oh,
can you do that?
Hooper Bukowski finds a distributor, heard the movie, pretends he's Fellini and Antonioni, and also his countryman Roman Polanski are rolled into one. One called Hooper Bukowski, and now that I've dropped out. Yeah, I remember the words, and they're not easy to remember. 40 years after, brother.
Oh, man, you did great. Everybody's applauding. That's fantastic.
I could hear him now.
What was it like being in that show? Was it backstage? Was it chaos?
Well, I mean, sure, sometimes it was, but it was just magic. I mean, it was a wonderful time. I don't know how else to explain it. Just magic.
There was one scene that even people that are not all that familiar with hair know about, the legendary nude scene, and I assume that you participated in that.
Everybody asks about that, you know. And the thing about it is the new scene had a wonderful meaning. At the end of the first act, I only did it when I played Wolf and when I was in the chorus. When I Claude doesn't do it, because at that point in the show, he's singing Where Do I Go. I did it as Wolf, and I did it in the chorus. And a funny story about that is, when you're in the show and you get to do little extra singing lines or little extra lines of dialogue or whatever, by Broadway rules, they have to pay you a little extra money each week. And the new scene was one of those extracurricular things that you did, and so they pay you a little more for whoever did it. I mean, you didn't have to do it if you didn't want to, you know. But I didn't care, and most everybody in the cast did do it. The new scene, actually, is a very beautiful scene. We stood up, and they dropped, like, a big cloth over us, and the lighting was very sort of dim.
Right.
And we'd have, like, Velcro little openings that we'd come up through, and we'd all stand there like paper dolls, and all it meant was, take a good look, we're all one. But anyway, one night I was doing that, and you don't have much time to sort of disrobe. And I had my tie-dye T-shirt, and for some reason that night, I could not get it off. And so anyway, I come up through my little hole, Velcro hole, but I left my T-shirt on. So, but I was nude from that
right.
point on. And as a joke, they paid me for half the nude scene that night.
Oh, you paid for half? Was that the original wardrobe malfunction?
Yeah, I suppose it was, the original wardrobe malfunction.
How long were you in here?
About 3.5 years. I take little breaks. When the song came out and was a hit, they let me go for a few months out in the road.
You managed to land a record deal with Steed Records.
Well, actually, yeah, like I told you, I sort of landed that deal 6 months before I got into hair, but, you know, we had to take time to record.
You had not recorded until you were in hair.
Right.
And you worked with people like Jeff Barry.
Yeah, Jeff Barry was my producer.
Your first single was called I Can Love You.
That was the song that, you got to keep in mind, I was just a young kid in New York and all this stuff was happening. And Jeff had signed me to the deal, and this is my first time in the studio in New York with a big-time producer. And he wanted me to sing this song that he wrote for this movie, I Can Love You. And I was really nervous as hell. So when I went up there to the studio, he had all of the music tracks recorded and wanted me to put my vocal on. And I started doing my vocal. And it was sort of overwhelming. And I started singing the song, and I wasn't hitting it right. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm going to blow my whole career right here. And I felt he wasn't loving what I was doing, let's put it that way. And I could sense it. And I'm thinking, oh, this is not going to work out.
And as it turned out, Jeff had to leave the studio for a few moments, and he said, why don't you try it when I'm gone? And you did, and it worked.
They took one when he's gone, he come back, and I nailed it, thank God.
Okay.
So I guess it was his presence that sort of, you know. And from that point on, we worked together for years.
And this is that first song, Robin McNamara.
I'm a
going to play a little bit of the B-side of that record, too, because the B-side...
Lila?
Oh, Lila, 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 Lila.
The song had to come out, like, within a few days because it was a rush job or something. And I probably shouldn't even tell you this, but, you know...
You've already gone too far. You got to now.
But Jeff says to me, we need a song for the B-side. And I said, okay. Well, I went into his office, and he said, I got this hook. And he started singing, la, 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 la. And so 15 minutes later, we had the B-side. I mean, if you listen to the words, I mean, it's not very... I don't know what the word is.
There's no deep message in this song?
Well, no. You know, I was in love with Lila. I guess that's the message.
Okay. I'm Ronnie Allen, so happy to be talking to the old hippie out there, who today is in Indiana. But you make your home in Florida these days?
Yeah, my wife and I have a condo down in St. Pete.
What's your wife's name, by the way?
Susie. She's my right arm. Well, we've been married about 12 years now.
Lay a Little Lovin' on Me was the one that became your biggest hit of all.
Jimmy, my buddy who came down and quit college, you know, he was as crazy as I was. When we worked in the car wash... We were living with my ex-wife and my son, but also one of her relatives in just a one-bedroom apartment. Can you imagine that? And Jimmy brought down his recording equipment. You know, all it was tape back then. That's all it was. It wasn't anything fancy. We had landed the record deal, and Jeff told us to go home and try to write some stuff, come up with some ideas. And so we did, and we came up with the idea of Lay a Little Lovin' on Me. We came up with that title. We came up with a little, you know, some music in the hook. And we play it for Jeff, amongst other things. And, you know, he seemed to really gravitate toward that song. But, he said, I don't think we can use that title. I said, why not? Believe it or not, he thought it was too...
risque?
Yeah, and at the time, you know, one of the songs in the top 10 was Lay Lady Lay by Bob Dylan. And so I said, well, Jeff, look at the top 10. It's Lay Lady Lay, Bob Dylan. He says, yeah, but that's Bob Dylan. I said, well,
yeah.
So what, you know? And so for 2 days, actually, he changed the title to Take a Little Time to Know Me.
Oh.
You know...
Oh, come on.
I'm dead serious. But then, you know, Jeff and I, out of all his acts that he had that sort of straight-ahead kind of simple stuff going, but with the whole concept of hair or whatever, I guess he wasn't afraid to take a risk with me. Anyway, not to Lay a Little Lovin' on Me was such a big risk.
Well.
But anyway, he decided to go with Lay a Little Lovin' on Me. He said, well, if we're going to go in that direction, and he came up with the very first line. And on a lot of the music and lead sheets, they don't write it outright. So he came up with this line. He says, can't you see that I am hung on your love? I swear to God, brother.
You need some more love, baby. Can't you see? Oh, now can't you see? Ever since we kissed that night, ever since we held you tight, I just don't want nobody else. So put your lips on mine, leave them there till the morning. Not enough of you, babe, I'm sick. Every day I need the day and every night time to move, babe. Every day, oh, every day. Don't you know what I've got inside? Love's a big time. Love that's growing day by day. You're such a pretty child. You're about to drive me wild. Come on, baby, now what you say? Hey, lay a little lovin' on me.
Lay a little lovin' on me.
baby, I want you. Baby, I need you. I love you.
Who were the backup singers on that record?
Jeff always hired five or six girls, and there was two or three black girls and two white girls. One of them was Ellie Greenwich.
I thought that Ellie was on that record.
Yeah, she is.
One question about Lay a Little Lovin' on Me. I know there are some collections that are out there that have it as a bubblegum song. Did you consider it a bubblegum song?
I don't know. I kind of call it lemonade music. But the thing about... Well, I don't know. But again, I don't want to sound like I'm derogatory because I don't mean it that way at all. It's just that that's what was happening then. The times were simpler. I mean, of course we had, like, you know, from 65 to 70, we had the psychedelia and stuff like that. But, you know, I hooked up with Jeff and we came up with that song. And I consider it bubblegum. I suppose in that genre, yeah.
We're going to play the record that was the follow-up, and it also made the chart. This was the follow-up single to Lay a Little Lovin' on Me, and this one is Got to Believe in Love.
Great song, not because I recorded it, but Neil Goldberg, who wrote it. He wrote some beautiful stuff. When Lay a Little Lovin' on Me took off, you know, I was a staff writer, and we all go up to Jeff's offices, and we had our little office. Actually, I'd go in the Brill Building, too, and we'd write songs, and, you know, they're just ideas. And Neil brought that one to me one day, and I said, we got to do that. Just got a great hook.
To Believe in Love, Robin McNamara, and of course one of the secrets of your success was working with some great people. You knew Andy Kim, of course. Now Andy was your label mate on Steed Records. Did you do any sessions with Andy?
Yeah, off and on. We'd help each other in different sessions, yeah. Bobby Bloom. Bobby wasn't on Steed, but yeah. Jeff produced him.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Bobby Bloom, the tragic story. Bobby had a huge hit single called Montego Bay.
Yeah.
And shortly after that, I don't know exactly what the circumstances were, but his life ended with a gunshot.
Yeah. I don't know the real particulars behind it, but it was sad, you know.
You knew Bobby very well?
We hung out a lot together. Bobby and I, we were pretty tight. We all helped each other out in different sessions.
In a few moments, we're going to find out how you could have probably ridden in the Indy 500 based upon a certain drive that you did across the country. We're going to tell that story.
Oh, boy.
Unbelievable story. Stay tuned for that. I'll do my little Casey Kasem and say, coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to drive you crazy with an unbelievable story. Before we get to that, you did do an album, a Lay a Little Lovin' on Me album.
Yes.
And one of the songs in that album was called Lost in Boston.
Lost in Boston, yes.
That sounds like a very serious song, but probably wasn't.
No. Although it's probably very true at times, I was lost in Boston. But it's funny because when I recorded that song, we did it at the RCA Studios in New York. Matter of fact, that album, we had the cast of Hair. I posted on the bulletin board at the theater, recording party, and the cast showed up, and a lot of those songs have big hooks on them, and it's the cast of Hair singing behind me. But that song, Lost in Boston, my brother Kevin was in town, and if you listen carefully, one of the lyrics in there is, Kevin would come and get me if he had a phone.
Was written by you and
Ned Albright.
Sounded like you had a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Let's do a shout out to Laura Pinto.
Laura, sweetheart. Yeah, she's just wonderful.
Laura Pinto of Oldies Connection.
She knows Jeff. She knows everybody involved. She has a wonderful heart.
And she got me to Ron Dante as well.
Yeah, Ron's a good guy. I was just out in L.A. about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and we recorded a remake of Lay a Little Lovin' on Me.
You also at some point worked with Tony Wine.
Tony Wine, yeah. You know the Archie, Sugar Sugar.
She was both Betty and Veronica.
Well, her and Ron Dante were the, were really
the right. But, I mean, she played both of the girls. She had it both ways. She could have her cake and eat it, too.
Yeah, yeah. I did a song called Mary Janie and Me back then.
Yeah, I happen to have Mary Janie and Me. I understand that has an interesting story. You want to go into that or not?
I don't know.
It's based on a true story?
Yeah, it sure is.
Oh, okay.
Seattle, Washington. Maybe we'll just leave it right there.
All right. It is, all right. We don't have to go into all the details because this is not the National Enquirer or the Globe. But if you want to read between the lines, feel free.
Let's just say I was inspired in Seattle.
Okay.
I wasn't sleepless in Seattle. I was inspired.
Okay. Why don't we put it this way? This may be based on a true story.
No, no. It's based on a true story.
Oh, it is based on a true story.
Yeah. Names have been changed to protect the innocent.
And so,
but the thing about Toni Wine was she's actually singing the section in the song where the two girls come in and singing, "It's all right with us, boy, if it's all right with you." And she's actually overdubbing with herself. That was well beyond Layla Love and Ami. Jeff wasn't afraid to break the mold.
You also did a version of Chapel of Love.
Yeah, we sure did. That was out at A&M.
When were you with A&M Records?
Well, that's when, you know, when Johnny Carson, he used to do a show in New York, and then he moved out to L.A., and when he did that, everybody, the whole entertainment business basically moved out to L.A., including Jeff Barry. And we recorded that out in L.A., and Jeff signed my ex-wife and I to a deal on the A&M Records. Her name was Joanne.
The billing on this record is Robin and Joe, which is your ex-wife, Joanne.
Right.
And are you going to become the next Sonny and Cher?
That's a, you know, it's funny you say that, because that's what Jeff was saying. He said you guys will be the next Sonny and Cher, only heavier. The FM version.
Today's the day. We'll
Jeff was one of the writers of Chapel of Love.
He wrote a lot of hits way back when, The Bangalows, The Crystals, The Run, etc.
Now, what everybody is waiting for, this involves a drive across the country, and you floored it.
So like I was saying, everybody was moving out to L.A., and at the time, I was in Hare, and Jeff had already sold his house in Long Island, and Bobby got rid of his apartment in New York.
Bobby Bloom.
They bought homes out in Hollywood, and so my ex-wife and I were going out there to just look at places for future reference, because I had to stay in New York because I was in the show. But you know, I took some time off, and Jeff had bought this car for his wife, brand new Citroen, you know, one of those like French limousine kind of things.
Right.
And he was going to ship it out there, but he decided he hadn't driven across country ever in his life. He said, let's just drive it across. So he asked me if I wanted to go, and me and my ex-wife and Bobby Bloom and Jeff Barry, we headed out to L.A. From New York, and what it was we wanted to just get there. We didn't want to take our time and all this happy stuff, so every time someone would drive a while, a few hours, and they'd get tired, you know, we'd rotate. So it'd be three drivers, you know. And so we're driving and driving and driving. And I'll tell you what, man, we got out in L.A. in 3 days. And the thing about it is we figured out our average speed was 72 miles an hour, and we actually got lost in Ohio for about 4 or 5 hours.
I'm reading this story here that Laura wrote, and it makes it seem like you had visions of becoming Mario Andretti. You gunned the accelerator. You went more than 72.
Well, no. That was our average speed. Think about what I'm saying. By the time we got to Joplin, Missouri, we were just fried. So we decided we're going to go stop at a hotel and just get 8 hours sleep and then take off again. And so we stopped in Joplin and we partied that night and then we all went to bed. We got up the next day and it was my turn to drive. Missouri and Oklahoma border each other and we left Joplin and within 10 minutes or so, we were into Oklahoma. It was real early in the morning, but the sun was just coming up. And I was on this highway that was going downhill, a four-lane highway, and there was no one else around. And so Jeff was in the passenger seat, Bobby was in the back seat with my wife, and I was driving. And I'm going, and there's, like I said, no one else around. I'm sort of going downhill, and I said to Jeff, and the speedometer on the Citroen went up to 110 miles an hour. And I said to Jeff, you think I could top this off here? And he said, what are you talking about? I said, I'm going to go 110. And, you know, at that time I was doing about 75, 80. He looks at me and he said, I'm not too sure you ought to do that. And I said, well, just want to see how fast this can go. There's no one else. Before he had a chance to talk me out of it, I just floored it. And all of a sudden, you know, Jeff was going, oh, no.
You hit the magic number of 110.
Here we go.
What happens if you go over 110? Does it break the speedometer?
Well, I figured I was going at least a buck 12 because I had it on 110 for a good 10 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And I kept flooring it.
And I think it's safe to say you took your terrified wife on the wildest ride of her life.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff was just holding his breath. And Bloom was in the back seat, go, Robin. And my ex-wife was screaming, we're all going to die.
You aren't scared at all?
Not me, no.
No?
I was loving it.
I think you missed your calling. I think you should be with NASCAR.
Well, I don't know. It was just one of those things that happened.
In other words, this is not something you do all the time.
Oh, no.
You recently did a re-recording of Lay a Little Lovin' on Me with producer Ron Dante.
Yeah, about a month ago, my wife and I went out to L.A., and we basically made a clone of the original.
Going to run that one as a bonus track, but we're going to close the show with a recording project that you did recently in Florida.
Yeah, I have some interest in a recording studio down there, and my engineer, and it's got a whole bunch of quality players and singers, and I recorded about 10 songs.
Tell me about The Prophet and the King.
Well, The Prophet and the King, that's the one out of the 10 songs that people seem to gravitate to the most. If you think about it, the two men in the rock and roll business, if it wasn't for these two men, rock and roll, at the very least, would have taken a turn in a much different direction. And
true.
I'm talking about Elvis Presley and John Lennon.
John Lennon was the prophet, and Elvis Presley was...
Yeah, but if you think about it now, John Lennon, when he was growing up, Elvis Presley was one of his heroes. If it wasn't for Lennon, the Beatles never would have formed.
It's true.
And if it wasn't for Presley, they wouldn't have had that influence of that American rock and roll, especially guys like Presley and Little Richard and Cecily, you know.
We're going to close with that song, but first, I want to wish you success, also the best to your family, and this has been
so much
fun to me. And once again, thank you, Laura Pinto. Robin, any closing thoughts?
Thank you, brother, for your interest in my career and what I'm doing and all the help that you've given me, and it's just well appreciated.
In 55, we met the rock and roll man. That's It's all right, Mama was his biggest fan. He's the hound dog boy who said, don't be cruel. Then he shook the earth and began to rule. In 64, we met the poetry son when he held a hand. His work was done. He asked for help to spread peace and love. Imagine the world flying with the dove. Long live the prophet and the king. We love you tender every hard day's night. Lonely the prophet and the king. You changed our darkness, you made it light. You made it light. Oh. We won't be lonesome tonight. There's a shining star walking with Mr. Moonlight. A country boy and an English lad who gave the world every single thing they had. Lonely the prophet and the king. You changed our darkness, you made it light. Long live the prophet and the king. We love you tender every hard day's night.
We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers, remembers the oldies. The 50s and 60s.
Well, that's the show. And now a couple of bonus tracks by Robin McNamara. Here's his recent remake of Lay a Little Lovin' on Me, produced by Ron Dante.
Can't you see that I am hung on your loving, baby? Now can't you see? Can't you see how much I need some more loving, baby? Now can't you see? Can't you see? Ever since the kiss that night, ever since I held you tight, I just don't want nobody else. So put your lips on mine, leave me there till the morning shines. Lord, don't leave me by myself.
Hey!
Lay a little lovin' on me, lay a little lovin' on me. Honey, doggone it, I depend upon it. So lay a little lovin' on me, lay a little lovin' on me, lay a little lovin' on me. Honey, doggone it, I depend upon it. So lay a little lovin' on me.
Every day is not enough of you, babe. I say
every day.
I need the day and every night time too, babe.
Every day. Every day.
Don't you know what I got inside? A love to be high. A love that's growing day by day. You're such a pretty child. You about to drive me wild. Come on, babe, now what you say?
Hey! Lay a little lovin' on me. Lay a little lovin' on me. Honey, I got it, I depend upon it. So lay a little lovin' on me.
Let me hear you now.
Lay a little lovin' on me.
Right,
lay a little lovin' on me. Honey, I got it, I depend upon it. So lay a little lovin' on me.
Oh, baby, I want you.
Shoo-ba-ba, shoo-ba-ba. baby, I need you.
Shoo-ba-ba,
I love you, I love you.
Shoo-ba-ba,
shoo-ba-ba. Oh, baby,
lay a little loving on me. Honey, my darling, I depend upon you. So lay a little loving on me.
Let me hear you now.
Lay a little loving on me.
Finally, here's Robin singing a song from his recent Florida recording project. This is called Stuck in the 60s.
Roll my hair, shoulder length, got needle music to give me strength. A flower for you, a flower for me. Remember the way it used to be, oh yeah. Look around how things have changed. Our way of life is rearranged. Here I am, stuck in the 60s for life. I got a three-room apartment with my second wife. I got memories to shelter me of the peace and love philosophy.
Peace and love philosophy.